And I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that?
President Trump offers controversial approaches to coronavirus. It's Monday, April 27th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Instagram and Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, new strategies in the race for the White House, warnings of global famine, grocery store workers also at risk, low-cost ventilators, animals and humans take to the streets. It's all on today's VOA Asia. It has happened several times during the pandemic. U.S. President Donald Trump, who has no medical or science degree, has used his daily briefing to promote a possible treatment or cure for the coronavirus. A comment during a briefing last week on Thursday led to an uproar. VOA's Carolyn Pursuti takes a look at what leads the president to make these comments and their ramifications.
Anyone who has watched a White House coronavirus briefing has witnessed President Donald Trump veer off topic. Here's what he said about disinfectants. Conservatives and liberals hear it differently.
And I see the disinfectant where it knocks it out in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection inside or almost a cleaning? Because you see it gets on the lungs and it does a tremendous number of the lungs. So it'd be interesting to check that.
A sharp response from the makers of Clorox bleach and Lysol warned that under no circumstance should the products be ingested or injected. Doctors also challenged it.
While this virus is certainly sensitive to many different disinfectants like isopropyl alcohol and bleach, there's no protocols, and the risks would almost certainly outweigh the benefits.
The following day, the White House released a statement clarifying that President Trump has repeatedly said that Americans should consult with medical doctors regarding coronavirus treatment. Leave it to the media to irresponsibly take President Trump out of context and run with negative headlines. So what is happening here? There is much that the medical community does not understand about COVID-19. Scientists agree that unconventional ideas occasionally turn into treatments after testing and research. On the president's suggestion of this to kill the virus.
Supposing we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light.
It is true. Ultraviolet technology is emerging. Researchers in Singapore are testing it to detect dengue, malaria, and strokes. NASA was studying how light technology might help cancer pain and is using UVA light for water filtration. The danger, says bioethics professor Arthur Kaplan, is when a president thinks out loud at a nationally televised briefing to a scared public.
I don't think the president understands that he can't just speculate or sort of let his mind wander to possible ideas when he is so influential in guiding people's behavior. He's in a role now where he's got the entire nation and much of the world paying attention to him.
Professor Kaplan says the solution is to have more doctors and scientists speak at the briefings, keep President Trump as the coach, and keep the experts as the specialists. The other solution might be what the White House appears to be doing, cutting back on daily briefings to avoid criticism of the president. The 20-minute task force briefing on Friday was the shortest ever. There was no briefing held Saturday. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Hong Kong police break up pro-democracy singing protest at mall. Hong Kong bookstore under attack in China reopens in Taiwan. Photos show train at North Korean leader's compound in resort town. Human Rights Watch urges Bangladesh to take in Rohingyas stranded at sea. Australians and New Zealanders mark an annual memorial under COVID restrictions. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. You can also stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The coronavirus pandemic has upended the U.S. presidential campaign. What was expected to be an ideological choice between President Donald Trump's hardline immigration and protectionist trade policies versus Democratic challenger Joe Biden's more moderate positions and support for health care is no more. Instead, analysts tell VOA's Brian Padden, this year's election could be entirely a referendum on the president's handling of the economic and public health crisis related to the pandemic.
With coronavirus deaths in America numbering roughly 50,000 and millions left unemployed by the economic toll, President Trump has shifted his campaign focus from overseeing an age of prosperity to leading a national recovery.
That's not a strong suit of Donald Trump, and he has been more divisive than uniting in that front.
During the coronavirus crisis, Trump has dominated the airwaves with daily White House briefings that critics say are more often used for self-promotion rather than providing useful information.
Thank you, everybody.
The approach does not appear to be popular. The president's approval rating has been falling in recent weeks as he shifted responsibility for testing to the states, gave conflicting advice on when to reopen the economy, and promoted untested and possibly dangerous treatments like the malaria drug hydroxychloroquine. Medical professionals on Thursday warned against the president's suggestion that injecting disinfectant could kill the virus, calling it dangerous. As some Americans have protested the lockdowns that have closed businesses, Trump encouraged some on Twitter. Days later, he criticized the governor of Georgia for relaxing restrictions too soon.
This is a very common tactic of the president to shift the blame to try to take credit for the good part and let other people take credit for the downsides.
The president also issued a 60-day immigration ban and has blamed misinformation from China, where the outbreak originated, for the spread of the virus in the U.S. Meanwhile, the approval rating of the presumptive Democratic nominee Joe Biden has risen, even though news coverage of his campaign has dwindled and public events have been canceled. That may be his plan.
There is a logic to getting out of the way and letting the president fall.
Analysts say Biden's years of experience in government and in managing the Ebola outbreak during the administration of former President Barack Obama have enhanced his standing.
Given what we're seeing as a window into how the Trump administration operates, that is going to work to Biden's advantage. It doesn't mean that this election is over. It is by no means over.
Trump's political fortunes could turn around before the election if the outbreak subsides and the economy starts to recover. But a predicted second wave of infections and shutdown in the fall could again boost Biden's prospects. Brian Padden, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, is the talk about Kim Jong-un being sick or worse true? Social media is abuzz with a wide range of stories. Rather than speculate, VOA Asia will bring you the facts when we know them. On this program, VOA Asia Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. The United Nations food chief is warning that while the world fights the coronavirus pandemic, it is also on the brink of a hunger pandemic. The executive director of the World Food Program met with the U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, to discuss ways to avert the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II. VOA's diplomatic correspondent, Cindy Sain, has more.
Armed conflict and poverty are already forcing millions of people around the world to go to bed hungry every night.
The World Food Program analysis shows also, due to the coronavirus, that an additional 130 million people could be pushed to the brink of starvation by the end of 2020. That's a total of 265 million people.
Humanitarian organizations, such as the Christian group World Relief, are also sounding the alarm. World Relief says the focus is likely to shift from coronavirus health-related concerns to starvation.
When we think just a few steps ahead, the potential impact on economics and food security could be devastating for much of the world, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, East Africa, Southern Africa particularly. where the economic factors are going to be significant contributing to food insecurity, especially in areas that we don't usually see it in, like urban areas.
World Relief is calling on the U.S. and other countries to take decisive action.
We, along with other international development agencies, are calling for the U.S. government to appropriate another $12 billion towards international assistance for this crisis.
If the world fails to act, relief experts say more than 30 countries could face famine as remittances from overseas and tourism revenues dry up. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Since the start of the coronavirus pandemic and quarantine measures in the United States, dozens of grocery store workers have died of COVID-19, and thousands more have tested positive for the virus. People are afraid to show up for their grocery store jobs, and despite the unprecedented levels of unemployment, few are volunteering to take on the risky work. Elena Wolf has this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Grocery store shoppers practice social distancing rules put in place to prevent the spread of the deadly coronavirus. They wait in long lines and follow other strict guidelines to help contain the virus.
Because masks are a little bit uncomfortable, you know, on the ears, it's a bit tight over here. Bandana, it's pretty much the same thing, because we're not protecting the things that we're breathing in. It's more what we're breathing out that's keeping the other people safe.
Regulations by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control limit the number of people in stores to 20% of the pre-pandemic numbers. But experts say measures have fallen short and come too late, especially for grocery store workers.
There have been over 3,000 cases of employees who work in supermarkets that have COVID-19. There have been 41 deaths. They have not been given masks. They have not been given gloves. Their union has insisted about that.
In mid-April, Google dedicated its main page banner to grocery workers, who are the least protected from a virus they are constantly exposed to.
I don't think anyone realized. Even the authorities didn't realize how serious this was. Even I didn't understand at first, until we saw how many people were seriously sick.
It's very hard to determine whether anyone is sick. Grocery stores don't have temperature readers installed at the entrances. Employees disinfect trolley handles, wash floors, and take credit and bank cards from customers at the checkout counter. Customers wear gloves and masks, and many enter grocery stores only when they need basic necessities. But the workers have no choice. Employees like Wando Evans, a Chicago-area Walmart employee who died from COVID-19. His family is suing the retailer for allegedly not doing enough to protect workers. In a statement, Walmart said it's heartbroken by Evans's death and listed safety measures the retailer said it took in response to the pandemic. Now supermarkets and other retailers are finding it harder to get workers.
A supermarket, I want to say, wasn't an easy job, but it wasn't a very stressful job for many people. Now it's become very stressful, and we also see a lot of people not wanting to go to work. But in the case for a lot of employees, it's not about the extra $2. It's not about, you know, getting laid off from a restaurant and, you know, going to work in a supermarket. Very often they would make just as much money going on unemployment.
Delivery driver Excelso Sabulao practically forced his father to leave his supermarket job and said he would support his parents on his own.
I guess the part that I'm afraid of the most is going inside the store and picking up those bags, you know, opening the fridge and the chiller, because I don't know if people who are working in that they call it shoppers, the Whole Foods shoppers, I don't know if one of them is infected.
Right now, Sabalawa says he doesn't have a choice, but what he does have is disinfectant, gloves, and hope. For Elena Wolf in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you. We'll be right back.
latest news from VOA Asia, Thailand has been cut off from duty-free access for $1.3 billion in exports to the U.S. market, 6 months after Washington warned it would pull back on trade privileges unless the country committed to more labor rights reforms. Analysts expect the new duties to do little direct damage. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the production of a ventilator normally takes a year or longer. But a group of researchers and engineers came together to make it happen in 1 month at a fraction of the normal cost. Mass production of the Spirowave bridge ventilator has begun, as low-cost ventilators could prove especially helpful in developing countries where supplies are much scarcer.
At Boyce Technologies in Long Island City in the state of New York, new ventilators are coming off the production lines, ready for a city that's become the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic.
We placed an order for 3,000 of these ventilators, a $10 million order.
These Spirowave bridge ventilators are not just a feat of engineering, but one of sheer determination. They were conceived and produced in a month's time. The cost? Less than $5,000 instead of the typical $30,000. And it's done by a group that until recently didn't make ventilators. Scott Cohen is the co-founder of NewLab, a technology hub in Brooklyn. A NewLab member living abroad saw the mounting death toll in Italy and asked Cohen and another member in New York about the possibility of NewLab building ventilators.
Both of us had the same reaction, like this looked complex.
But Cohen discovered a 10-year-old design for a basic ventilator from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, and reached out to the researchers.
We sent a team up there to meet with the team that had formed maybe 4 days before up at MIT to kind of revive this old design.
MIT engineers Shakti Shaligram and Kimberly Jung tested an early prototype on lab pigs.
We put our device into a 80-kilogram pig, so pretty big pig, and the device broke.
This is part of every design process for everything. Like, things always fail.
But through continual refinement, a year's worth of engineering was done in a month.
We tried to come up with a design that could be made many different ways. We're a research institution. We're not a production house.
That part was up to the New York team.
We were doing a prototype every 24 to 48 hours.
Marcel Botta heads up product development firm 10X Beta.
Whenever we left the building, we went home to sleep for 4 hours, or we went to Boston to test the device there. There was nothing else but that.
The result is Spirowave, a bridge ventilator that automates airflow to patients, helping them breathe when they can't on their own.
We have a real-time pressure feedback and safety systems and alarms that help to upgrade what a normal bag would be able to do by itself.
While it's not meant to replace a traditional ventilator, it can act as a temporary stand-in.
If they have a limited number of ventilators and they've gotten the patient through a really critical stage, they can move them onto this ventilator as a bridge.
The devices received authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for emergency use.
I think we all should be thinking about what can we build and what can we fix and who can we do it with.
Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, as humans shelter in place to help contain the spread of the coronavirus, it's making the outside world a quieter, less crowded place. That's good news for wild animals, many of which are feeling emboldened to venture out beyond their normal territories. As VOA's Julie Tabo reports, bears, deer, and wild boars are just a few of the species that are roaming streets and parks, causing menace or delight, depending on people's perspectives.
At Yosemite National Park in the northern part of the state of California, a bear ambles fearlessly across a forest glade, and a herd of deer stroll down an empty road. The park, famed for its waterfalls and giant sequoia trees, normally attracts more than 3 million visitors a year. But since it closed to tourists under coronavirus guidelines, normally shy animals are venturing out.
If you were to be there in person, it is quite a sight because it's very quiet right now in the park. You hear the natural sounds of the river and the wildlife and the birds.
From elephants taking a stroll in a suburb in India to a young puma on the streets of Santiago, Chile, wild animals are being spotted in the unlikeliest places. Professor Sarah Beckesi explains.
A lot of these species have been existing on the periphery of cities, but because the threats that they typically experience, the traffic, the noise, the air pollution and the conflict with people have been dramatically reduced from the self-isolation that we're all having to experience, these animals have been emboldened to actually re-enter these places.
That's certainly the case in Great Britain, where residents in lockdown in a London suburb have been enjoying regular visits by a herd of friendly deer. In Italy, a Tuscan family adopted a fawn that considers itself part of the family.
He's at the front door again this morning and we went for a walk again. He spent the day with us yesterday and he just joined us pretty much in everything.
But not all wildlife encounters have been so friendly. In the Israeli city of Haifa, where the coronavirus is keeping residents indoors, wild boars have swarmed into people's gardens.
Salam!
Onto deserted streets, rooting through garbage and spooking residents.
They are all around here and we are terrified that they will bring us corona or other disease.
The coronavirus lockdown has brought out wildlife in other parts of Israel as well. In Tel Aviv, packs of jackals have taken over a deserted park, scavenging for food in what is normally a playground. But some residents are taking it all in stride.
Usually these animals are not doing anything to people, to pets. People have to understand that they are going to stay with us. They were before, and they are going to stay after us.
I really hope that this time in self-isolation, when we're actually seeing these remarkable things happen in our cities, will awaken us to the fact that we can share our spaces with wildlife. And it's actually, it's enchanting and it's beautiful and it's something that we should desire.
In these days of uncertainty, self-isolation may be an ideal time to reflect on how we share the earth with other creatures. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
For urban dwellers under stay-at-home orders, finding ways to safely exercise outdoors has been challenging. In Oakland, California, where many parks have been closed, city planners are experimenting with turning streets into temporary recreation areas. Matt Dibble has a look.
When Oakland, California closed most parks and playgrounds on April 1st, many claustrophobic residents moved to the sidewalks for exercise. This created new risks.
People don't have enough space to move in their neighborhood to access essential services or do what they want to do to stay healthy and sane, like go for a neighborhood bike ride or run.
Only a week later, transportation planners implemented a bold plan, restricting cars on 74 miles of the city's streets and giving those who walk, ride, and jog a lot more room to roam. On some streets, acceptance was immediate.
The day they put out the cones, we saw it, so we went out, and it was really fun. And yeah, we've been doing it pretty much every day.
In Oakland, the plan is for the streets to return to normal as physical distancing rules are lifted. But for some, this taste of freedom may be difficult to give up.
I think we'll miss it.
Matt Dibble for VOA News, Oakland, California.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. You can also find us on our website at voanews.com for all the latest news and information. We thank you so much for joining us today, and we thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe, be well.